signals for tea now, hot cuppa draw near.
Thanks for listening, and thanks, members, for supporting KBOO Portland, your community radio station at 90.7 FM. The time is 10:59. Coming up at 11, Stage and Studio is off today. Instead, we'll hear the Radio Zine with host Sarika Mehta. She speaks with Christina Hernandez, the author of the Book of Unknown Americans. And at 11:30, Art Focus is off today. Instead, we'll hear an interview with award-winning filmmaker Hubert Sopper about his documentary, We Come as Friends, which is about South Sudan and how big oil is fueling conflict there.
Storm waves consoling, we'll all just send signals for tea.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of the 4th Portland Renters Assembly and their March for Housing Rights. The assembly is on August 26th at the Midland Library, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. There will be speakers on the housing crisis and community organizing, personal stories, large and small group discussion about political strategy, but also defending and otherwise supporting each other. Snacks and childcare will be provided. The march is on August 28th. It starts at City Hall at 6 p.m. with a rally and ends at the Multnomah County Building with another assembly. The theme will be Housing Rights for All and will encompass everything from homelessness to affordable housing to tenants' rights to at-cost public housing. More information can be found at kboo.fm under Community Events or portlandrentersassembly.info.
You gotta fight for your right!
Pasando el trapo sobre la mesa y está cuidando que todo brille como una perla.
Good morning, and thanks for tuning in to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. Stage and Studio is off this morning, so we're featuring a special on the Radio Zine. I'm Sarika Mehta. Christina Enriquez is a writer from Chicago whose work includes her first novel, The World in Half, and her collection of short stories, Come Together, Fall Apart. Her latest novel is called The Book of Unknown Americans. This is a tale of immigrants from various parts of Mexico and Central America, all of whom reside in one apartment in Delaware. They each offer a first-person account of their lives as immigrants and as Latinos in this country. At the center of the story are Mayor Toro and Maribel Rivera, and their love story is that of two teenagers navigating their place in this world. The book is beautifully written, even when there are difficult events that take place. But above all, this book is a necessity in an era of damaging rhetoric for immigrants in this country. Christina Enriquez and I met on Skype and talked about her writing process and real-life experiences and people who inspired the book. Again, thank you for chatting with me, and thank you for being on KBOO.
Thank you for having me.
Well, first, for our listeners, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Let's see. I live in the western suburbs of Chicago now, although I was born in Delaware and moved around a lot as a kid. So there's a bunch of different places that I guess I think of simultaneously as home. I'm a mother of two young kids and, you know, a writer besides that, so.
And this is not your first novel, right? You published a series of short stories or a collection of short stories, and you published a novel before this one. I end up talking to a lot of debut novelists, so since you've been seasoned, talk about how this process of writing this was a little bit different.
I wish it had been easier somehow because it was the second book, but I think with every book, you have to relearn sort of how to write that particular book. You know, like I went into the second one thinking, oh, you know, like I've got two books under my belt, one of which was a novel. Maybe I kind of know what I'm doing. And then it turned out that that wasn't the case at all. And this one actually took me longer than either of the first two. It took me 5 years to write The Book of Unknown Americans. So it was a lot of trial and error, surprisingly. You know, you feel a certain amount of confidence only in the sense that you've done it before, so you know you can kind of get to the finish line again. But in terms of actually putting the story together and, you know, making those characters come to life and all of that, it's, you know, not any easier, I don't think.
That's unfortunate.
I know. It's like you wish that wasn't true. I don't know. Maybe it's easier for other people, or maybe there's a different kind of learning curve for other people. But for me, it seems like I'm getting slower and sort of worse at it the further in I get to my career. So, yeah.
I don't think it's getting worse. I think there's probably just more that with any field, more you know, then you kind of have to account for everything. Well, because my next question was, why do you think it took longer for this novel?
For a few reasons. One of them was that it was a really personal book for me. So I think I had some blind spots going into it early on, like certain things that I was really stubborn about keeping in the book, and I kept them in for too long. They were kind of derailing other parts of the book just because I had this sentimental attachment to them in certain ways. And it just took me a long time to finally see I needed to like lose those things for the sake of the book, kind of. I also think it took me longer because I was consciously trying to write a book that was more plot-oriented than anything I'd written in the past. And that was sort of an uncomfortable, you know, just like a place I wasn't familiar with, really. You know, I'm a very like character-driven writer, I think. And I think I come from a place of really loving short stories more than anything. And so I just felt like trying to figure out how to work a plot into this book all of a sudden was like, again, it resulted in just kind of a lot of trial and error, like throwing in a character and then being like, oh, that didn't work, and having to like go back to the beginning and rehash the whole thing. And so there was just a lot of that.
It's very interesting to learn about the process. Well, let's talk about the Book of Unknown Americans. Tell us in your words what this is about so that I don't give away spoilers.
Well, the Book of Unknown Americans to me is, it's, I mean, my sort of like quick pitch is that it's about a bunch of people from all over Latin America who all live in one apartment building together in Delaware. And everybody gets a chance at some point during the course of the novel to tell their story of coming to the United States. So that's sort of one side of it. On the other side of it, which is more like the narrative thread of the book, there's a 16-year-old boy named Mayor Toro who lives in that apartment building. And one day, this girl and her family, Maribel Rivera and her family, they move in across the way from him. And he sees her and is like immediately attracted to her. And over the course of the book, sort of falls in love with her. But what he doesn't know at first is that she has actually arrived from Mexico with her parents because she suffered a brain injury the year before in Mexico. And so her parents have brought her there to get her the kind of education that they've heard she can only get at this particular school. So it's sort of about young love, but then it ends up becoming about a lot of other things. Maribel's mother, Alma, is carrying a lot of guilt over the accident and over what's happened to her daughter. And that motivates a lot of things that happen throughout the book. Mayor, being the 16-year-old boy, is kind of like just head over heels and would do anything for Maribel. And he does do something that has sort of great consequences for everybody else in the book at one point. But it's about family and about guilt and blame and love. And for me, really the thing that it's most about is home and the idea of what it means to make a place your home.
Yeah, I definitely felt that when I was reading it. And this concept of unknown Americans, I liked its simplicity, but it was also very powerful. And I wondered, you know, was this paying an homage to immigrants in this country, or what was the inspiration behind that concept?
The inspiration was my dad. My dad is an immigrant who came from Panama to the United States in the early 70s. And at the time that I was writing the book, I guess I was reading a lot of the sort of the media coverage of immigrants and of Latino immigrants in particular. And I think there was a shift in tone after September 11th about the idea of outsiders versus insiders. And it kind of was taking root in certain ways as I was writing the book, and it was getting leveraged in many ways, I felt like, against Latinos. And here I was you know, raised with my dad, and we've gone to Panama every year since I was born, and it was just such a normalized experience for me. And he had come here on a student visa. He was going to study chemical engineering, and then he ended up meeting my mom, and he stayed. And it was just like, you know, he's worked at the same company his whole life. It was like the kind of story that I felt like no one was telling. And I felt, I had the sense, and that it was unfortunately borne out at certain times, that people look at my dad and see somebody that he wasn't. You know, that they would look at him and just see this sort of brown face and he see him as an immigrant, and that that in their mind would link to certain things. And I just felt like people are so, I mean, it only takes you half a second to realize people are obviously so much deeper than that. And I wanted to tell the stories that I didn't feel like we were hearing very much, which were very ordinary stories of people who are coming for all sorts of different reasons. And sometimes that meant in the book that I was really sort of poking at stereotypes. You know, there's like this kind of narrative that we have about the immigrant journey to the United States. And specifically with Latinos, there was the immigrant narrative of like crossing the border. And this idea...
It's really gotten hyped up with a certain Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah. I know. We sent him my book the other day.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I had this idea when he came out. I emailed my publicist and I was like, I think we should send him the book. And I know he won't read it. But I like the most we could hope for sort of is, you know, maybe he'll rant about it and be like, I can't believe someone would send me this. But, you know, it's clear he needs some sort of edification.
I really hope he does rant about it. Well, anyways, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I know, right? But so I felt basically like there was a different kind of story to tell. And I wanted to tell as many of them as possible. So that's why the book's sort of crowded with all of these neighbors who, again, get a chance to tell that story.
There were a couple of moments in the book that kind of gave me pause, like, a part with Alma, Maribel's mother, who's just, she doesn't speak English. She's trying to navigate the educational system in this country. And there's words like IEP and special education. And she's really trying to advocate for her daughter. But there's just, there's so many barriers in the way. And had you witnessed anything like that in real life? Or?
Well, I hadn't seen it, any of it firsthand. But my mom is a translator for the school district in Delaware. And she works with immigrant families whose kids, in many cases, in most cases, have special needs. And they're trying to get placed. And it's so difficult and so frustrating. And I was just trying to sort of imagine that kind of frustration. I mean, there's a scene in the book where Alma gets lost on the bus.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, that's my own personal, one of my own personal greatest fears in life. Is like missing my stop and then ending up in, you know, God knows where and having no idea how to get back and just like that feeling of disorientation. And that is a really deep-seated fear in me, despite the fact that if that were to happen to me, I would obviously be able to communicate with people and read signs and figure out a way back and use my cell phone and all of that kind of stuff. She has none of those resources at her disposal, you know, and yet still has to sort of strike out into the world if she wants to do anything or help her daughter in any way while she's here. And I just was trying to imagine what it would be like. And it seems so harrowing.
Oh, definitely. And another issue was, you know, Maribel, like you said, has this brain injury. And that affects everything about her and her entire family and how people perceive her and them, with this other layer of the fact that they're immigrants. And I was wondering... Well, I had a couple questions about that. The process of including a character with this kind of circumstance, how did you develop that?
I knew really early on that I guess that I wanted her to have some issue that was like a specific thing that would bring them to the United States because of her. And then it took me sort of a long time to nail down what exactly that would be. Part of the reason I settled on traumatic brain injury for her was because I knew I was trying to develop this love story between Mayor and her, and I felt like I didn't want it to be anything physical, like visible, I guess is what I mean. You know, I wanted him to be able to look at her initially and not know really that anything was going on with her. So I don't. I just sort of one thing led to another, and sort of by a process of elimination, I ended up with a traumatic brain injury, which I knew nothing about, and then had to, you know, do a lot of research for and just hope I was sort of getting it right.
You're listening to the Radio Zine on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. Stage and Studio is off today. If you missed any of this program, you can find the archive on KBOO.FM. I'm Sarika Mehta, and this is an interview with author Christina Enriquez. Her latest novel is called The Book of Unknown Americans.
It doesn't matter much to me. Let me take you.
It leads me to my next question. In your book, you give an account of each character's perspective to some extent, first person to some extent, except Maribel.
I think I know where you're going. Yes.
Well, the point being, I was just, because that would have been really fascinating to see her point of view. And you see it at times when she's in a dialogue with somebody else. Especially there's a scene where she's telling Mayor or somebody, whatever she remembers from her accident, whatever she remembers from her hospital and recovery. And she says, I lost myself somewhere in between. Very touching lines. But the point being, I was curious why you didn't include her first person narrative in the story.
There are a few reasons, I think. One was, I think just at some kind of sub level, I was feeling probably like she wasn't capable at the time that the story unfolds of telling her story exactly yet. I mean, there's the sense, hopefully by the end, that she'll go on and be able to do that sort of thing. In ways that I didn't articulate to myself as I was writing, but I think probably I got a little bit enamored with the idea of that everything in the book revolves around her. You know, she's really like the center of everything that all of the characters do. And yet she was this sort of silent person. And I sort of liked the power in her silence being at the middle of everything like that. And then there was just sort of a structural reason too, which was that in my head the whole structure of the book was really formal, really regimented. So I basically had it laid out so that it would be an Alma chapter, a Mayor chapter, and then a neighbor. And somewhere along the line, I decided that from each apartment unit, there would only be one person who spoke for that family. Outside,
kind of like a representative.
Yeah, outside of Mayor and Alma, who are the main narrators of the story. And so for the Riveras, their family is Arturo, Alma, and Maribel. And for reasons that I think become clear the further you get into the book, I felt like that person had to be Arturo, which then just sort of necessarily left Maribel out. But it's amazing to me how many people have asked that question. How many people really wanted to hear from her?
Yeah.
And it's like not something I thought about very much as I was writing. I just think it's so interesting that it's so clear to everybody else and wasn't, it was just like, you know, I didn't see it at all as I was writing.
Oh, that's interesting. This kind of goes back to the rhetoric and the way media portrays issues concerning immigration policy and immigrants without giving away what happens. Basically, there's this very tragic, devastating incident. And the figures of authority are telling Alma, we'll get justice for you. And it's like, and she says, justice is a word.
It was a word. It was a concept, but it wasn't enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been thinking about that line, actually. That was popping back into my head a lot lately with just, you know, there's been so many news reports lately and it's like, they just keep coming with this kind of relentlessness. And then, you know, there's been this corollary issue with some of the reports about forgiveness and the idea of forgiveness and can you forgive people and all that kind of stuff. But I guess I keep thinking about, yeah, just that line. And what does that really even mean to us, justice? I don't know.
Well, I was curious about the community's response to your book. And as far as I understand, there's a Spanish translation of your book. I was curious how the communities representing both sides, how they've responded to your book.
Everyone has been really, like, people have welcomed the book in a way that I really didn't anticipate. It's been interesting to me, you know, the whole time you're working on something, which again, for me was 5 years of like being in this writing cave, basically. And the whole time you're working on it, you're just trying to kind of get all the puzzle pieces to fit together and for, you know, the book to make sense and all the motivations of the characters to make sense and all of that. And you're not really thinking about how it might be received or, you know, I mean, maybe in small moments, like right leading up to the publication or something, you're thinking about that. But it's been really overwhelming to me. It was published simultaneously in Spanish by Vintage Español, which was really exciting for me because it was the first book of mine that had been translated into Spanish, which meant not only that readers in the United States who were Spanish-speaking could read it, but that my family in Panama for the first time could read my work, which was a big deal to me. So that was pretty meaningful. But, you know, I mean, everywhere I've gone, I was sort of in some ways like anticipating a little bit for it to be a little bit more contentious, you know, because it's kind of a hot button issue, I think. And I was like, oh my gosh, am I going to do an event and someone's going to like pop up out of the back and start yelling at me, you know, like something.
Oh, no.
But, you know, thankfully that hasn't happened. And I mean, actually quite the opposite. People have been really excited about it. And I've gone to a lot of high schools. I think that's sort of been the most moving part of it. Seeing the kids who are just actually like really grateful to see some version of their family or themselves like represented in a book. And it's sadly like, I mean, as we all know, like there should be more diversity in literature, right? Like it's hard to come by. So it's always really humbling for me to do that kind of event and feel like I've contributed, you know, in some way to their thinking. So
absolutely. In fact, there's this hashtag Unknown Americans Tumblr. And as I checked it out just very briefly, and it looks like it's just stories from different immigrants and their experiences being here. I assume this book inspired the project, or how, tell us about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I mean, the spirit of the book was, you know, to sort of tell as many stories as possible. And I thought maybe that it would be nice to have a place where people could share their real life stories of coming to the United States. So it's been a little quiet for a little while now, but when the book launched, we had a bunch of stories that were coming in, and it's open to anybody, and it's still open. You know, anytime I get a story, I try to put it up there, and it's not limited to people who are from Latin America. It's immigrants from all over the world who have come to the United States who, you know, want to share those stories, because I feel like in that chorus of voices, you have a different kind of reflection of what the immigrant experience is. That's an antidote to, you know, that, again, that sort of entrenched narrative that we get from the media all too often.
I really, really appreciated your book. Is there anything that you want to make sure that we talk about before we close out?
I'm just really grateful for the reception the book's gotten and for people reading it and, you know, people like you who, I mean, again, you just don't know what's going to happen, and you have these moments when you're writing it of like, is this going to fail? You know, and if I finish it, will anybody read it? And if anybody reads it, will anybody like it? You know, like you just have all the like typical neurotic writer thoughts. So it's just, you know, it's so great then to like really talk to readers who feel like they've been moved by it. And I mean, the biggest compliment that I have gotten about the book, and I've gotten it more than once, is that someone reads it and then they say to me, you know, that like within a few weeks of reading it, they were walking down the street and they passed someone, you know, who was apparently Latino, and they thought to themselves that that person has a story. You know, I mean, it's interesting because it's like you shouldn't need a book to tell you that. You do know that. We know that. But I guess it's useful to be reminded of that sometimes.
That's a huge compliment. That's very powerful. Well, actually, what's next on the horizon for you now that this book is off and running?
I am working on a new book. The whole time I was writing The Book of Unknown Americans, I kept saying to my husband, I'm never writing a novel again. Remind me never to write a novel again. And here I am now working on a new novel. So,
well, keep it moving. And we look forward to your next book, your next novel. Christina Enriquez, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me.
Thank you.
That was Christina Enriquez, author of the novel, The Book of Unknown Americans, now out on paperback. You can read other immigrants' real-life stories at www.unknownamericans.tumblr.com, and you can even share your own tale. That's it for the Radio Zine. The music you hear is by La Santa Cecilia. I'm Sari Gameta. Thanks for listening.
Nunca se sabe cuando nos va toca. Se sabe cuándo nos va a tocar. Lloran los niños, lloran a la salida. Lloran al ver que no llegará mamá. Uno se queda aquí, otro se queda allá. Por salir a trabajar. Lloran los niños, lloran a la salida. Lloran al ver que no. Se queda ya, eso pasa por salir a trabajar.
And you're tuned to KBOO Community Radio 90.7. Coming up at 11:30, Art Focus is off today. Instead, we'll hear an interview with award-winning filmmaker Hubert Sauper about his documentary, We Come As Friends, which is about South Sudan and big oil and how big oil is fueling conflict there. First, we have announcements.
Hi, this is John Shuck, host of Religion for Life. This week, we are going to talk about race. It's a subject that white people don't want to talk about. Because of our silence, black bodies are arrested, imprisoned, and murdered. Telling the truth about race is Kelly Brown Douglas, author of Stand Your Ground, Black Bodies and the Justice of God. Find weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/religionforlife.
Everybody say
hi, this is John Shuck, host of Religion for Life.
On Saturday, August 29th, from 2 p.m. until 5 p.m., the revolutionary music and spirit of Miss Nina Simone will be celebrated by three generations of Grassroot News on KBOO Community Radio.
I put a spell on you.
Let us put a spell on you Saturday, August 29th from 2 p.m. until 5 p.m. with the music and revolutionary life of Miss Nina Simone, right here on 90.7 FM KBOO.
I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Hubert Selper, who's an acclaimed filmmaker whose earlier film Darwin's Nightmare earned him an Academy Award nomination for Best Documentary. He is the director, writer, and cinematographer of the award-winning documentary Just Out, We Come As Friends, which is now playing in New York, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., and next week will be in Chicago and San Francisco. Welcome to Background Briefing, Hubert Selper.
Hi, Ian.
And your film is a devastatingly powerful film, and it's, of course, it's your own personal journey via this little homemade silver plane that you call a lawnmower with wings, named Sputnik. But you take us into the continent of Africa, and particularly the most tortured, perhaps, not that there aren't other atrocities going on across Africa, but South Sudan is particularly tragic because it's the world's newest country, had so much promise, and it's descended into a vicious civil war between two warlords. But it's a journey into how colonialism, globalism, and corruption have devastated so